This is Don Letts, and you're listening to 90.7 FM WGXC Accra. Stay tuned.
Network, this is the news. This is the network. This is the news. This is the network. Network in sports. There are updates. And updates. There are numbers. And numbers. There are sorrows. In sorrow, there is redemption. This is the news. This is the network. This is the news. This is the network. Network. This is the news. This is the news. This is the news. This is the network. Network. On air, in air, waves controlled. On air, in air, channel connection. And the moon turns to blood. A stream runs through. This is the network. Network. This is the news. This is the network. This is the news. This is the network. Network. This is the news. This is the network. This is the news. This is the network. Network.
And the moon turns to blood. A stream runs through. And the moon turns to blood. This is the network. Network. And the moon turns to blood. A stream runs through. And the moon turns to blood. This is the network.
WGXC underwriting support has been provided by Dedicated Presentation Solutions. Allow DPS to turn your audiovisual how-do-I's into here's how you can's. Visit dedicatedpresentation.com or call 845-475-8465 for more information. Dedicated Presentation Solutions, your audiovisual partner.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Food New York. Sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a WGXC sustaining supporter by investing in community radio every month. Go to wgxc.org and click donate. Thank you for your support.
We interrupt this broadcast to bring you a special news bulletin.
Stay tuned to this station.
Stand by for news.
Direct via satellite from our on-the-spot task force.
Good evening from our newsroom in New York.
This is
Daily News and Weather Report.
From the WGXC newsroom, this is the WGXC Hands-On Radio News Update. I'm Philip Grant.
This is Tom Rowe. You can go to the newsroom at WGXC.org for more information about anything you hear here. Noah Eckstein is reporting for Columbia Green Media that a two-year audit by the Office of the New York State Comptroller has found the Hudson City School District failed to properly secure and protect its information technology systems against unauthorized use, access, and loss. In response to the state's finding, the district now has issued a corrective action plan. The audit was released January 14th and covered the period between 2018 and 2020. Auditors found that the Board of Education and school district officials did not adopt adequate IT policies, thereby leaving the system's data susceptible to fraud and cyber attacks. Officials did not implement a satisfactory disaster recovery plan against potential risk factors and attacks and did not provide sufficient IT security awareness training to students and staff or adopt an acceptable use policy. The audit also found questionable internet use on 4 to 6 computers tested. The district has implemented remedies to these issues, said Jesse Bohem, Hudson City School District Business Administrator. Quote, our interface looks different. Students get in-class training and we have IT safety professional development for staff, unquote, said Bohem. The auditors recommend adopting comprehensive IT policies that address recovery plans and cybersecurity, implementing students and staff IT training, developing written codes and protocols for administering systems access and disabling more than 100 network user accounts that included generic and former employee information. Quote, since the audit, we have totally revamped the IT department and are working to move it completely in-house, unquote, said former Superintendent Maria Suttmeyer. Read more about this story at HudsonValley360.com.
Rick Collin reports in the Times Union that the unemployment rate in December in the capital region was less than half of what it was in 2020. The 2.5% unemployment rate that the State Department of Labor reported for the Albany-Schenectady Troy area was much better than the 5.4% reported for the same period in 2020. Ithaca at 2.2%, only metro area in New York with a lower unemployment rate last month. Columbia County posted the lowest local unemployment rate at 2.2%. Read more about this story in the Times Union.
William J. Kemble is reporting for the Daily Freeman that in remarks delivered on January 26th, U.S. Representative Antonio Delgado told attendees at the Ulster County Regional Chamber of Commerce breakfast that the current division between the Democrats and Republicans will not get in the way of working to resolve detrimental bureaucracy. At that meeting, Ellenville Regional Hospital President Stephen Kelly noted that the Rhinebeck Democrat was able to work with Republican U.S. Representative Elise Stefanik to address problems caused by a regulation change that occurred without public input. Quote, it was not in the Federal Register that could lead to the closure of half of the small hospitals in New York, unquote, he said. Kelly said Delgado and Stefanik have continued an 18-month push with recent efforts to have Congress adopt the Protecting Rural Access to Care Act and making a direct appeal to the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. Quote, Elise Stefanik, obviously we're not in the same party, there are different politics, but we care about an issue that speaks directly to our community, unquote, Delgado said. Quote, we both have critical access to hospitals that we know our communities depend upon, and that's where the work needs to be done, unquote. Other facilities impacted included Margaretville Hospital and O'Connor in Delhi. The proposed legislation restores the rural hospital criteria for determining a critical access designation. Read more about the story in the Daily Freeman.
Masara Makati reports in the Times Union that 500 gallons of oil spilled January 25th at the Sitco on the River Road in Bethlehem in southern Albany County. The leak occurred after a malfunction in a containment area's vapor recovery system, which removes vapors from crude oil, causing the spill. Fire departments from Selkirk, Elsmere, and Delmar joined the DEC and the Bethlehem Police Department at the scene. The DEC was removing snow and gravel contaminated by oil at the gas station. Read more about this story in the Times Union.
Andrea Macko is reporting for Porcupine Soup that former Greene County Assistant Public Defender Anthony Pastel, 38, of Freehold, has pleaded guilty to felony assault. Pastel was arrested in August 2020 following an incident in the village of Athens. The victim, according to the state police, suffered serious injuries and was taken to Catskill ambulance to Albany Medical Center. Pastel was charged with second-degree assault and second-degree strangulation, both felonies. The charges were later upgraded by a grand jury to include attempted murder. Because the assault occurred in the presence of a minor, Pastel also charged with endangering the welfare of a child, a misdemeanor. Pastel was also charged with driving while intoxicated after leaving the scene of the attack. Quote, having uncovered additional facts of the case, the people in the court agreed to accept Mr. Pastel's plea to felony assault in the second degree in satisfaction of the charges, unquote, the Greene County District Attorney's Office said in a statement January 24th. Pastel faces up to 7 years in prison plus 3 years post-release supervision when he is sentenced on March 23rd. Pastel was hired by the Public Defender's Office in the spring of 2019 and was placed on administrative leave after his August 2020 arrest. By the following November, he was no longer employed by the county. Pastel will lose his license to practice law as a result of his conviction. Read more about the story at porcupinesoup.com.
Mid-Hudson News reports about Republican television entertainer Joe Pinion, who announced January 17th he is running for U.S. Senate to replace Democrat Chuck Schumer. The 38-year-old former Colgate University football star is the former host of a show on the right-wing Newsmax network that is on the Mid-Hudson cable network locally and other systems around the country. Pinion said, and I quote, Chuck Schumer, he no longer represents the 19 million New Yorkers. The Schumer from 1988 no longer exist. What we have now is somebody who is so concerned with holding on to power that he has forgotten to empower the people who have placed their trust in his hands. For me, we want to reinvite the people to this conversation. End quote. Schumer is not just a long-serving senator, but the current majority leader. Pinion opposes Schumer, he says, because the majority leader allows free speech. He said, and I quote, Chuck Schumer is supposed to be the adult at the table in Washington. Instead, he allowed children to hijack the national conversation about justice reform, and people died as a result, end quote. The only other issue the story addresses is Schumer's large campaign war chest next to the challenger's meager account. Pinion said, and I quote, we just have to raise enough money to get our voice out there, end quote. Read more about this story at MidHudsonNews.com.
Nick Reisman reports for Spectrum News that Zephyr Teachout, who lost a bid for Congress in the 19th congressional district in 2016, is now joining New York Attorney General Letitia James's office as a special advisor and senior counsel for economic justice. The activist and Fordham Law School professor last year announced she was running for attorney general after James announced her run for governor. But after James decided instead to run for re-election, Teachout ended her campaign. She praised James in making the announcement of her new job in the attorney's office. Quote, she pushed for reforms to modernize New York State's own antitrust laws and give enforcers the tools they need to hold dominant firms accountable, unquote, Teachout wrote. Quote, I couldn't be happier to be working with her and the extraordinary lawyers and leaders in her office, unquote. Teachout ran for attorney general in 2018 but lost to James. She previously lost elections for governor in 2014 and against Republican John Faso in the 19th congressional election in 2016. Read more about the story at Spectrum News.
And that wraps up the WGXC Hands-On Radio News Update. For local weather reports, public meetings, and other community information, use the WGXC website, WGXC.org. From the WGXC Newsroom, I'm Philip Grant. Have a good day.
Your forecast for the next 2 days. Well, on Thursday, mostly sunny with a high near 26 degrees. Thursday night, a slight chance of snow showers after 1 a.m. It will be mostly cloudy with a low of around 16 degrees. And on Friday, a chance of snow showers mainly after 1 p.m. It will be cloudy with a temperature high near 31 degrees. And more snow on Friday night. It will be cloudy with a temperature low of around 11 degrees. And that is your weather update from WGXC. 90.7 FM. Radio for open ears in Greene and Columbia County.
Thursday, January 27th, tune in all sorts of creative community voices on the radio at 90.7 FM. Including at 10 a.m., Cheryl Kay talks with Joe Bebko, the associate editor of the Syncopated Times, a Utica-based jazz publication, and also talks with guitarist, composer, and educator Samuel Moshing on Situation Fluxus at 10 a.m. on the radio at WGXC. At noon, Brad Monkel from Greenville talks to singer-songwriter Liam Davis on his Ear Candy show until 2 p.m. when it's time for Borders and Boundaries on What's the Frequency, Kenneth, a show that sets the week's news to brand new music. Then at 3 p.m., turn on the news to hear the latest about what voting machines are being locked up. At 7 p.m., Christopher Funkhauser speaks with local poet George Quasha on Poet Radio. At 9, Pirate Radio from Andrew O'Connor live from Toronto on the Disco 3000 show. And then Ted Barron has the Boogie Woogie Flu at 10 p.m. live from the WGXC Hudson studio on the radio at 90.7 FM. Tune in to all sorts of creative community voices on the radio Friday, January 28th, including at 9 a.m. on the WGXC Morning Show. We'll hear from Garrett McCary talking about eels in the Hudson River, and we'll also hear from meteorologist Hugh Johnson talking about local snow as a major storm might be on the way. At 10 a.m. on the Global Agogo Show, we hear tracks from around the world, including from artists Cavador Exquisito, Salih Sadibdi, and Johan Ile Ferrand. Then at noon, After the local news, Jared Wiegershut is live in the WGXC studio in the basement of the First Presbyterian Church in Hudson with 2 hours of the Sugar Shack Jukebox, funk, R&B, rock, pop, and more, much of it brand new. At 4 p.m., the WGXC afternoon show is live in Acre, and at 6 p.m. we go live to Catskill with members of the Catskill Clubhouse, teenagers there on Main Street, talking about their stories and playing their songs. At 7 p.m., we hear from youth in Hudson on the Bound by Books show about what they've been reading. And then at 8 p.m., we hear from Animal Collective, Cat Power, Ronnie Spector, and others on All Mixed Up. And then DJ Var is live with the Friday Night Vibe session at 10 p.m., live from WGXC Hudson Studio on the radio at 90.7 FM.
Hello and welcome to the better weather for Thursday, January 27th. Early this morning, it's -1 in Halcott Center and 4 degrees in Ulster Park. A cold but dry day is ahead. A high of 28 happens at 3 p.m. Conditions will be dangerously sub-freezing, so if you're not lucky enough to stay inside, be sure to layer up, grab a coat, gloves, and hat, and those sunglasses because cloud cover will be low today. Overnight temperatures fall to just 21 degrees. Adjustments are in for the storm track tomorrow, and it looks like Friday won't be very snowy. We might see some flurries fall through the day, but not much of accumulation is expected, and a high of 32 will be seen at 3 p.m. Overnight, maybe a half inch could fall. Saturday, light snow all day. Several inches of accumulation is expected, along with a high of 17 degrees. 9 degrees overnight takes us into a dry Sunday with a high of 25. Sunset today will be at 4:48 p.m. and sunrise tomorrow will be at 7:09 a.m. Looking way up, we see an encounter with a co-rotating interaction region on Saturday could spark minor geomagnetic storms and aurora. Solar wind speed is currently 463.7 kilometers per second at 8.6 protons per milliliter. Radio propagation conditions are currently fair below 4 MHz till dark, then fair below 15 MHz overnight. The 24-hour predicted KP index is 3, quiet. The current sunspot number is 71. And this has been The Better Weather, brought to you by the Catskill Makers Syndicate.
Ocho. Seis. Uno.
Tune in the Radio Art Hour, Saturdays at 3 p.m. on WGXE, a show where art is not just on the radio, but is the radio.
Oh, radio, radio. Uh-huh. Radio.
The Radio Art Hour draws from the Waveform Broadcast Radio Art Archive, an online resource that aims to identify, coalesce, and celebrate historical and contemporary international radio artworks made by artists around the world. Tune in the Radio Art Hour, Saturdays at 3 p.m. on WGXE 90.7 FM.
Are you tired of your flying saucer always breaking down on your way to Mars?
Wish you could get more bang for your whoopee at the gas pump?
Well, here at Flying Saucer Mart, we have the perfect flying saucer for you.
It goes as fast as light. It comes in a variety of colors and only costs you 75 whoopee.
Come down to 375 Bionic Ave in Pluto City and fly home with a new used flying saucer today.
Cool radio, cool wash, I'm Welcome to 2022 Talks, where we are following our democracy in historic times.
If Russia invades, civilians, including Americans still in Ukraine, could be caught in a conflict zone between combatant forces. The U.S. government may not be in a position to aid individuals in these circumstances.
Secretary of State Antony Blinken urged American citizens in Ukraine to leave immediately amid heightening tensions between Moscow and Kiev. The U.S. delivered a response to Russia's demands Wednesday, outlining core principles the U.S. will defend, including Ukraine's sovereignty and territorial integrity. Russian leaders warned of retaliatory measures. After 3 decades on the bench, Supreme Court Justice Stephen Breyer is expected to announce his retirement this week, which would provide an opportunity for President Joe Biden to make good on a campaign promise.
The president has stated and reiterated his commitment to nominating a black woman to the Supreme Court and certainly stands by that.
That's White House Press Secretary Jen Psaki. Democrats expect to hold hearings and votes before Breyer officially steps aside at the end of his term. The nomination process could derail the Senate agenda, as Democrats hope to revive President Biden's climate and social spending bill. Raphael Warnock of Georgia and other Democrats sent a letter to the White House Wednesday urging the expanded child tax credit be included.
97% of families with children qualify. So this is about lifting the burdens of our neighbors. If made permanent, this tax cut for families would push poverty in a typical year down below 10% in 47 states.
Biden suggested recently the extension might need to be dropped. President Biden will travel to New York next week to discuss efforts to end gun violence with newly elected Mayor Eric Adams. During his campaign, Adams, a former police officer, promised to deploy more officers and reduce the amount of guns entering the city. He called on Congress to pass gun reform legislation. Federal Reserve Chairman Jerome Powell indicated interest rates will soon be raised for the first time in 3 years as policymakers try to fight the highest inflation in nearly 4 decades.
The economy is quite different. It's stronger. Inflation is higher. The labor market is much, much stronger than it was. And growth is above trend, even this year, let alone last year. So all of those things are going to go into our thinking as we make monetary policy.
Some economists believe the Fed waited too long to confront rising inflation. Others are concerned moving too quickly could slow hiring. 27 states have redrawn their congressional maps. Several are still waiting approval, and others are disputed, including Alabama, North Carolina, and Ohio. Colin Morazzi with the ACLU of Ohio says redistricting has become a hot-button issue among voters.
The maps that are ultimately adopted from one state to another, in the aggregate, has the ability to change the party of power in the U.S. House of Representatives. And people have rightly begun to view redistricting as a linchpin for democracy.
I'm Mary Sherman for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our 8 trust indicators to support transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
Thank you.
We just heard Umar Kanate with Heya Deo. This is from the indestructible beat of Soweto from 1986. Udukatila Shange Namajaha with Soba Bamba.
You're listening to The Morning Show on WGXC 90.7 FM.
Next, we have an interview from
WOOC.
To learn more about this program, the Sanctuary for Independent Media, visit us online at mediasanctuary.org.
In a written statement on Monday, Saratoga City Judge Francine Vero dismissed all charges, including unlawful imprisonment and disorderly conduct against All of Us co-founder Jamaica Miles. Jamaica Miles is back with us to talk about the judge's decision. First, Jamaica, congratulations.
Thank you.
So tell us, what's your reaction to the decision?
Relief. It's been months for myself and others, going back and forth to court, financial burden, the stress on our family and community. It's been a lot. I'm glad to see that we at least have reached the end of this part of what we're facing in Saratoga.
Yeah, I was going to ask this question. You know, this has been going on since the beginning of September for you. When you turned yourself in, and now it's the end of January. Can you just go in, share a little bit more about sort of that labor, the emotional and beyond that goes into fighting charges like this?
Absolutely. And unfortunately, there are people that deal with this on a daily basis, and they don't have the luxury of going through it outside like I have. There are many that get arrested and they're inside jails waiting for their day in court or going back and forth to court. But I went and turned myself in, was handcuffed and processed and remained handcuffed while the first arraignment was held, had to sign my name while handcuffed. That is all psychological trauma on an individual. My body was not my own. I was restricted. I was told where to go and what to do and where I could be. And having those handcuffs on, even just for hours, is real. And then to be told, okay, let's go back to that place where you were just traumatized, and let's go back again and again and again. It's a lot. And just the labor of going back and forth, right? I live in Schenectady, going to Saratoga. That's a trip and a journey. Deciding, you know, what I'm doing, because I now have to determine my schedule based on these court dates. Having conversations with lawyers to determine, you know, okay, what is this process? What's happening moving forward? And it's about my life. So I have to make decisions about what I will do, what I won't do, and make sure I have a full understanding. It's a lot. It really is. And like I said, I'm not the only one that's gone through it. A lot of people have, and we still have more cases that are pending.
Right. And so with that, just staying on the decision for a minute, in your press release that all of us put out, you quote part of the decision where the judge says the court disagrees with the people's assessment of Ms. Miles's conduct. Ms. Miles is not the most culpable. She is simply the loudest. And it goes on to talk about the video and the video evidence that we went into in our last interview. But the DA seems like her response is that she might still pursue this. Are you worried that this is going to drag out, or what do you make of that?
What I believe the district attorney, Karen Hagen, is proving is that she's learned nothing, that she is willing to dig her heels in and press forward, even when there is now a ruling by a judge, which it was at the judge's discretion, that this is over. It's dismissed based on the 10 points of evidence presented to the court, based on facts, not on rhetoric, not on my good standing alone. And that the DA's office is actually going back on their word. Because earlier in January, on the record, Assistant District Attorney Frandino said the DA's office would not fight if the judge chose to dismiss in the interest of justice. So which is it? They won't fight the judge's ruling, or that they will? Is it, and why? Why have they changed their mind? What is different now than before? I think it's because the public's attention is being drawn to the fact that there is this injustice happening in the DA's office. And so I think Karen is now trying to save face.
And beyond sort of the reaction of the district attorney's office, are there other things that you have learned by being involved so intimately in this type of process?
There is not enough time in this segment to talk about the things that I have learned. I guess the biggest takeaway for me is something that I already knew, but unfortunately now I have a personal understanding. It's the scales of justice are tipped towards the DA's office. They have all of the discretion and the power and the resources. Win or lose, they get paid and they go home, right? There was no skin off their teeth if I went to trial and then went to jail for a year. It made no difference for them in their lives. They got to go home to their families every single day. I, on the other hand, would not. And just the process of how it drags on, it's a lot. And I hope that more people start to look at our justice system and think about what are the ways that we need to create change so that there truly is justice for everyone and that there is not a two-tiered system that already exists.
Thanks for that, Jamaica. Now, you mentioned that folks like Lexis Figueroa still have charges. Could you talk a little bit about that and what's next in general?
Yeah, Lexis Figueroa is still has charges pending. He's the leader of Saratoga Black Lives Matter, an organization that we continue to support. And we continue to support Lex as he fights these charges. And we're waiting to hear from Lex, you know, what is it that he needs and how he intends to move forward. I don't know if his next court date is scheduled, but we also are waiting for the New York State Attorney General's report. They are investigating the police department in Saratoga. That has bearing on Lex's case. It would have had bearing on mine had the findings come out sooner. So those two things I feel like are in tandem right now, and we're kind of waiting to see what happens. I hope also, though, and Lex mentioned this in his quote, that because there has been this attention given to my case and the things that have been discovered, it will also show the same thing is happening to Lex, that he is being targeted. His charges are not the same as mine were, and they are not just related to the July 14th case, and he can speak to it better than I can. But it is this pattern from the DA's office and from Saratoga Police Department. So what we're doing is continuing to pay attention and apply pressure and make sure that we actually have justice and not just revenge.
Is there any insight on Letitia James, the Attorney General's office's report of when that might be produced?
At the end of last year, which was really just last month, right? We hope to have it at the beginning of this year, right? I don't know what that means. Really, it's subjective. I haven't received an update, but hopefully it is relatively soon. I know that the AG's office had said that the Saratoga Police Department had to turn over a certain amount of materials December 15th. So let's hope that means, you know, maybe in February, we'll be able to have a decision and know what their office has discovered based on the conduct of the police department in Saratoga.
Jamaica Miles, is there anything else that we didn't cover today that you want to make sure that we know?
That we need to continue to look with a critical lens of the things that are presented to us and not simply accept what one person says, such as the Saratoga DA. Again, there's 10 points the judge had to take into account when making a decision on my case. The district attorney simply looked at one. Let's make sure to continue to apply pressure and be critical and work together, because it's going to take all of us to create the change that we need.
Great. And just beyond that, is there a list of these 10 points that are easily accessible?
I can share it to the All of Us page sometime later today so that folks can see what they are.
Okay, great. Jamaica Miles, thank you so much for joining us today.
Absolutely.
Did you see if that works through the bench yet? Or let's try it.
Nice.
That's quiet.
Quieter than it was 2 weeks ago.
Yeah.
It's the Tang Museum in Saratoga Springs. I'm standing with art handlers, the curator, and the artist Julian Goldman in front of his complicated piece called Computer 1.0. They are all preparing for the new exhibit, Radical Fibers, that opens next week, and are getting ready to turn Julian's installation on.
You know, I haven't seen this on yet.
Here it goes. Look that way. It is very satisfying to watch it turn on.
Large fabric hangs in complex shapes on two sides of the room. As they turn it on, the mechanism on the wall pumps colored water in complicated patterns through tiny tubes that are woven into the fabric. The effect is like the graphic from The Matrix, but also like a blanket.
Oh, wow. That's really cool with all the light now. Yeah. Look at that. It's really cool the way the changes sweep across the whole sheet.
I was just explaining how that happens. With
it's not like a continuous thing. It sits there and then all of a sudden it goes.
This installation, the inputs are really standardized, so and very regular. So basically each system gets a 1 second shot of water every 3 seconds. So you can, if you can watch the outputs here, like 2, 3, there's a 1 second shot in the top, maybe 1 second shot middle,
all right, so
and then 1 second shot bottom.
Okay.
And so I play a little bit with the pressure to kind of get it to this equalized state where it allows all this kind of very randomized movement. And so the friction of the water kind of wants to hold it from moving, and the pressure builds up in each of those little air springs until there's like a critical release that triggers a wave of movement like that. But it's very random. It's just like fluid dynamics that I don't understand fully, you know?
It's not sending a message. There's not like a...
Yeah,
a coded message in there.
No subliminal messages. I don't know. You tell me, Julia.
Well, if there is, it comes from
physics.
Right. In this, we're like, yeah, I guess that's what it's showing you, is that relationship of friction and tension and compression, right? But in the past, we've done different versions. We've done just like waveforms where we say, you know, it's going to slowly increase in fill, and then decrease in fill.
Hmm.
And have like these two waveforms of air versus water. Or we've had like a motion sensor, and it just hits a shot of water every time a person walks by, and so you reflect the occupancy of the room.
Rebecca McNamara, the curator of the exhibit, explained the overall concept.
So the exhibition is called Radical Fiber, Threads Connecting Art and Science, and it's about all of these different stories throughout history and in contemporary life of the way that fiber-based practice specifically has actually influenced or impacted the sciences. And so when I was conceptualizing the show, one story that a lot of textile historians are familiar with is the history of the Jacquard loom. It's a mechanism to add on to the weaving loom that was invented in the early 1800s. And that loom used a punch card system to help mechanize the weaving pattern. And so weaving itself is a binary technology, right? Over, under, over, under. That's how all weavings are made. And that is also how modern computing works. 0-1 technology, all of our computers run on that binary system. And so it's a really interesting intersection between textiles and technology. And so I had known about computer one for a few years, and I love the way that it was contemporary artists investigating this history and also kind of expanding it in additional ways that we can think about how binary technology functions, like the way that Julian was just explaining the water air, right? Two components going through. So there's a lot going on, and I think it really opens the door for people to think about the way our world works in new ways. So I wanted to investigate that question of how art and science intersect in a way that felt a bit more radical and provocative. And that was in response to a question that the artist Dario Robledo asked here at the Tang in a 2017 interview. He asked, how can I, as an artist, actually change the way a heart surgeon performs surgery? How can I, as an artist, actually change the way astronauts go into space? And I thought, wow, that is a very provocative question. And I really wanted to answer it. And I realized that fiber practice, both materials and techniques, have actually been doing that for hundreds of years, have actually been changing the way we think about, experience, and act in our world. And so that was a very catalyzing moment for me for the exhibition.
Do you want to talk a little bit about how the Coral Project came about?
Yeah, so another catalyst for the exhibition is the first model of hyperbolic space. So hyperbolic space is a type of geometry that negates Euclid's postulate that parallel lines can never intersect and will always remain equidistant apart. This is the geometry that we all learn in school. But there's actually another geometry that exists in our universe where things kind of swoop and curl and crenellate in really complicated ways. Since it was discovered in the 1800s and for more than 100 years after, mathematicians said that there was no way to create a model of it. Well, in the late 1990s, Dr. Dina Tamina, who's a Latvian mathematician who's teaching at Cornell, was tasked with teaching her undergraduates hyperbolic space. And she was remembering how much she struggled as an undergraduate to learn it because it was so complicated. And she said, you know, I really need a functional model. There had been one kind of attempt to make a model earlier that was paper, but it crumbled. It didn't work. And so she mapped it out on paper, and it's essentially mapping out exponential growth. And when she did that, she recognized what she had written down as a knitting or crochet pattern. And so she was actually able, through having the knowledge of both the mathematics and the knowledge of crochet, which is a traditional feminine handicraft, she created the first model, and it was accepted as such by her fellow mathematicians. It was the first fiber artwork to be on the cover of the Mathematical Intelligencer, and she, you know, shared that pattern widely, encouraged others to make it and use it. And so one thing that was discovered when she made this model is that it actually looked like something that was very familiar in nature. It looked like corals or kale and certain lettuces. It had these crenellated forms. And so in the early 2000s, a different set of artists, Margaret and Christine Wertheim, were wanting to draw attention to the negative impacts climate change was having on our oceans and specifically on our coral reefs and creating bleaching events around the world. So as ocean water is warm, it stresses out corals and they bleach and often die following the bleaching. And so Margaret and Christine Wertheim decided to create this massive crochet coral reef project that would bring together that mathematics, bring together awareness around climate change and oceanic corals. And they expanded that project, which started as the two of them working, to create a satellite reef program, which is what the Tang is participating in. So the satellite reef program opens it up to communities to create their own satellite reefs. And so almost 200 or around 200 people have actually sent in corals from all over the world.
In the part of the museum called the Bridge, volunteers have laid out countless crocheted coral pieces that have been sent in. They are sewing and stapling them onto cardboard forms, and the result that is taking shape truly looks like a colorful living coral reef. Brene Newman is a volunteer helping to construct the reef.
Which one is yours?
I think this one is mine.
Yeah. Cool. So how did you know how to do it, or what happened?
Definitely had to watch a lot of YouTube videos. So it was kind of a mix between looking at the pamphlet and kind of figuring out which one I wanted to do, and then.
So you signed up and you got a pattern?
Yes, we came with a little pamphlet that came with like samples.
And then now you're here putting them all
together.
Yeah,
it's really cool. I haven't sewn any on yet. But it's fun to try to figure out what good placements are. I was about to go back and look for a neon green one.
Do you feel like you're really comfortable with hyperbolic space now?
No, comfortable. I don't know, but it was cool to see. Exactly. Yeah, it's just cool to see how like science and craft overlap in that sense, and art overlap in that sense.
Yeah.
For more info on the exhibit, visit tang.skidmore.edu. Reporting for Hudson Mohawk Magazine, this is Moses Nagel.
That interview was from
WOOC.
To learn more about this program, the Sanctuary for Independent Media, visit us online at mediasanctuary.org. Next, we're going to hear from Poughkeepsie, Joe McPhee, the legendary saxophonist, free jazz saxophonist. Joe McPhee has a new record out in 2021 with Lassie Murhug. It's called Harmonia Macrocosmica, and this is one of the tracks called Theatrum Orbis Terram. Joe McPhee from Poughkeepsie on the radio at WGXC. Thank you.
like to do a show on WGXC?
Would you like to do a show on WGXC?
Did you hear that?
No. Thank you.